Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Eurobytes. This is the May 5th, 2026 episode. I'm joined today by my good friend Christian. Not with us today are our podcast host, Todd, and our good friend Fabian, who are both somewhere in the world. I don't want to move around the world for the first thing I want to talk about, Christian. I just want to stay in Germany, and I want to start with Friedrich Merz, the chancellor with the lowest approval rates ever that a German chancellor had to endure. And fittingly, in the German weekly Der Spiegel, you know, as listeners and viewers, we do criticize the Spiegel quite a lot, but it is Germany's largest weekly newspaper, still by the number of readers. Friedrich Merz explained, no chancellor before my time had to endure these things. Now, you ask yourself, what are these things? Keep in mind, Angela Merkel had the global financial crisis of 2008. The Greek crisis, yep. She had the invasion of Crimea with little green men. Gerhard Schröder had Germany being called the sick man of Europe. Helmut Schmidt had the Red Army faction terrorizing and killing several Germans. Friedrich Merz
top-rated politicians, hijacking a plane, a German Lufthansa plane.
Yes, and then, oh, and keep in mind also the terror attacks at the Munich Olympic Games in 1972. And then, last of all, you also had Konrad Adenauer, who actually was detained in some kind of concentration camp during the Nazi era, and then had to arrange for the last 10,000 German prisoners of war being sent home. Yeah, Mr. Merz, you're right. No one had to endure what you had to endure. The greatest thing is this is what he said to the Spiegel, and then the Spiegel editor goes like, yeah, but Olaf Scholz had it even harder in social media, and Friedrich says, yes, that is correct, but no one had this intensity of things happen. Now, we do got to say one good thing about Friedrich Merz though, and that is, first of all, he's not Angela Merkel. The second thing is Friedrich Merz, unlike a lot of politicians to the left-hand side in Germany, does not actively sue people or does not file police reports. This is something that the German police is now doing, by themselves, which is a very interesting thing to happen. Friedrich Merz was called Pinocchio, you know, the Italian. The Italian little puppet whose nose grew and grew as he was lying. And, well, the German police were in some kind of vorauseilender Gehorsam. It's like blind following, like blind obedience, tried to make sure that this shall not happen. This shall not happen.
Like proactive obedience, as it were.
Yes. Yeah, the other thing is... Friedrich Merz feels kind of out of touch with the people. The interesting thing is, on the day of local journalism on April 30th, he had a talk with a group of people. You could call it a town hall meeting, and then a woman dying of skin cancer raises her arm to be allowed to ask a question. She's like, Mr. Merz, why are things being cut from public health insurance as you were trying to increase your salary by 48,000 euros a year? And he had some kind of meltdown and goes like, listen, lady, I did not ask for a 48,000 euro increase in my salary. And this is the Friedrich Merz who actually said that he's gonna divide AFD by two, the voter number. Now, according to the newest polls, AFD is 4% ahead. In an average of polls, we do have AFD at 27%, like aggregated average. We have the CDU-CSU at 23%. You got to keep in mind, dear American friend of ours, that CDU-CSU always contains also of the latter, the CSU, coming in at like 40% in Bavaria, Bavaria being the, by population, Christian, I think is the second biggest state. I think every fourth German is, no, every fifth German is from North Rhine-Westphalia, and every sixth German is from Bavaria. Now, CSU is really strong in there, roughly translated into 5% of the total vote of this bloc, meaning you actually have 18% CDU in 5/6 of Germany. It's kind of a poor thing to happen. And one thing that I want to add, this might be interesting to you as well, Christian. AfD today, according to the new Forza poll, was for the first time the party with the highest competence to solve the problems in Germany, coming in at a whopping 13%. 13% of Germans think that AfD is best prepared to tackle the problems, chased closely by SPD, which is like by CDU, which is like 12%. Then you had the Greens and at like 9%. You had SPD and the Left at 5%. Now, if you had 12 plus 13 plus 9 plus 10, you realize 56% of Germans said not a single party is able to fix the problems that Germany is having. And you know, this is the interesting thing. We see the rise of this new populism in the US. I think it's we're about to head for the post-MAGA time. In Germany, there is no post there's no post-AFD. Even AFD does not manage to catch the people. No one is catching people, and no one is catching the absolute majority. So this is all from Germany. Can I get an amen, or can I get a stop, man, from you, please?
Well, so so American viewers who and listeners who like a lot of the dissident right podcasts know the phrase, you're not going to vote your way out of this. Meaning just voting isn't going to solve this, not within the premises, not within the confines, the guardrails of the current system. I mean, first of all, so, well, let's start before we make good excuses for the AfD. Let's start with being critical of the AfD. Like, none of the German parties, and you might find the same in the United States, but definitely in Germany, has people in its top positions that would have succeeded anywhere in the free market economy. In the United States, you have a lot of people who become politicians and who were successful in the free economy. Yeah, even
take Vivek, buying patents and selling.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's talk about not so fraudulent people like Vivek Ramaswamy, but even like Mayor Pete, Buddy, whatever his name, Buttigieg, McKinsey. Donald Trump was a successful entrepreneur in various fields. Many of them were very successful lawyers, so they at least had that going. Whereas in Germany, much of the political system, you've got seriously and staggeringly unimpressive, underwhelming people. Like there was this chancellor candidate for the SPD from a couple of years ago, who then became the commissioner of the one of the leading commissioners of the European Union. Remind me of his name. He was such an unimpressive figure. They used to call him the mayor of Versalen because that was his only claim to fame.
Oh, Martin Schulz.
Martin Schulz. So, yeah.
Unable to pronounce his last name correctly.
Yeah, so Mr. Schulz, not only did he not graduate from high school, nor did he do an apprenticeship. I think he didn't do anything, but somehow became mayor of his...
he bankrupted his own hometown of Würselen.
Yeah, so he became, somehow he managed to become a mayor with no apprenticeship to his credit. So again, in Germany, you can have a very respectable, successful six-figure salary career if you never attend university, but if you do an apprenticeship, be that a white-collar or a blue-collar apprenticeship. He didn't do that. He didn't attend university. He didn't manage to finish high school to a degree that it would have allowed him to go to university had he wanted to. Somehow he managed to become the mayor of a town, bankrupted it, and then made his way to the highest political office in Europe. And every single German politician who you look at, almost without exception, are supremely unimpressive figures. Now, the interesting thing about the AfD is an interesting mixed bag. So on the one hand, you've got very accomplished people in the AfD, some of them. So the current head of the AfD, she, not only does she speak Chinese, or some Chinese, she used to work for McKinsey. She was an entrepreneur, so she is a pretty accomplished woman, Mrs. Weidel. They had had plenty of economists in their ranks, so they used to be called the Professors' Party. Now many of them left, and see, for quite a while, it used to be a social and professional death sentence if you were caught being an AfD supporter and an AfD member. And so a lot of people, a lot of competent people who thought about going into politics didn't go to the AfD. So they also attracted a lot of very embarrassing candidates. So they are kind of a mixed bag. So sometimes if some of these people are interviewed, you're like, God, I don't trust you solving anything. That being said, all other parties are not better or probably worse. So that's it. In terms of the political system, again, you're not going to vote your way out of this. First of all, the political system, I'm still not sure that they're not going to find a way to ban the AfD. So there's that. And then secondly, you're talking about a political system, even if, and you might have seen that with the election of Trump, you might get some good executives at the top. Doesn't mean that the courts are not going to undermine you and void a certain political decisions you're going to make. I mean, very often you find ridiculous judicial sentences passed, like where a woman insults her foreign-born rapist in a courtroom and she gets a harsher sentence than her rapist. So,
well, Christian, she's known to this culture here. She knows that she's not supposed to do this.
Yeah, no, exactly. Whereas his excuse in court, well, he wasn't really aware of the whole concept of consent and all. And so rightfully, people are skeptical. They see at the they look at our thoroughly unimpressive political elites, and then they look at the system. So rightfully, they don't have much trust. And the American viewers and listeners know the term of the deep state. It is the same in Germany. Actually, it is, in some ways, even worse. What used to be USAID, at your side, we've got tons of these quasi-USAID publicly funded NGOs, GOs, whatever, and it's going to be so people don't have much trust that anything will change. And, like, now there's something that you Americans don't have. Remember, two-thirds of laws these days are actually made in Brussels, i.e. with the EU, no longer at the nation state level. So therefore, I mean, everything as a voter you want can be overturned somehow in Brussels. Somehow you are a state that never wanted migrants. And then Brussels can be said, well, you need to take your fair share, even though we invited them over. So that provides the framework, Lucas. And that's why, yes, everything you say is correct, but that's why people believe it. Talking about, unless you want to make a last comment on that, we could segue into
the UK, the
Merz, Merz and Trump, lest we forget Merz and Trump. Yeah. Lucas, there was a bit of a row and a rift. Well, I'm gonna give the bullet points, and you kind of fill in the blanks. So it turned out that Merz had been invited by Trump, and Trump was very nice to him in the White House. But even on his way out, Merz started talking smack about Trump and certain things he didn't like. And then Trump said, "Well, this is it. You Europeans are not paying your fair share. You talk bad behind my back, none of you guys helped me with my war of illegal aggression against Iran, at least judging from a point of international law. Hence, I'm going to withdraw the first 5,000 US troops, which he is referring to a base in the northeast of Bavaria called Filsack, which has a striker brigade, and a lot of Americans are cycling through that base because typically that's where they prepare them for foreign missions, particularly for Iraq and Afghanistan. They used to prepare them in that base. They've got sort of little villages and all kind of urban combat built, and Trump wants to withdraw 5,000 Americans. Lucas, what am I forgetting? Put a bit of color on that whole background.
The horrible thing was how this whole thing came into existence. You would think Chancellor Merz would have gone to the media and say, hey, we do not agree with what our American friends are doing. Thus, we need to rethink the stationing of American troops. No, it happened in a way worse situation. Friedrich Merz is in a discussion with school children, or like teenagers, not even young adults. And Friedrich Merz, let me just look it up because it's been a bit embarrassing. Yeah. So he says, according to Friedrich Merz, where these kids are like 15, 16, and Friedrich Merz goes, I don't think the Americans can end the war in Iran quicker than they think, quote, because the Iranians obviously are stronger than expected, and the Americans obviously also seem to lack a convincing strategy. It gets even better, or it gets even worse. The Americans entered this war, evidently without any strategy. Thus, it's even hard. This is what a newspaper says. Thus, it's even harder to end the conflict. Quote, especially given the fact that the Iranians, obviously, like. Friedrich Merz loved the word offensichtlich, or you can say clearly, obviously, whatever. Even though the Iranians obviously negotiate very smartly, or even very smartly do not negotiate. Quote once more, a whole nation is being punished by the Iranian leadership. And the word that he says is not just punished. He says the whole nation is being humiliated. Honestly, he could have known what happened. Frankfurter Allgemeine, I hate quoting one newspaper all the time, but they are improving. The Overton window in Germany is shifting a bit for the better. Frankfurter Allgemeine can be read once more. Anyway, one guy, Nicolas Busse, he said an interesting thing, and let me quote him. He says, there's one thing that many in Berlin underestimate. The times of Chancellor Schröder and Foreign Minister Fischer, during which you could do domestic opinion against an American
war. Every day, your data is being tracked, collected, and sold, often without you even realizing it. Big tech companies control your devices, your apps, and the information you share. From your messages to your browsing habits, everything is being monitored and stored. Over time, we've traded privacy for convenience, and most people don't even question it. But what if you could take that control back? That's where Mark 37 comes in. Mark 37 provides privacy-focused phones, laptops, and tablets designed to give you full control over your digital life. With secure systems, expert support, and simple tools, they make it easier to step away from constant tracking and data collection. Because privacy isn't just a feature, it's a fundamental choice. It's about protecting your data, your freedom, and your future. Take back control of your digital life with Mark 37.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Without having to fear the future of NATO are finally over. And seriously, Friedrich Merz has done a bad job once again. Friedrich Merz wanted to become chancellor, but he never wanted to be chancellor. And we're now presented with 5,000 Americans leaving Fils Eck. And let's say it this way, back when Germany, when the Cold War ended, Germans spoke of the peacetime dividend. There was no money had to be spent on the army anymore. Keep in mind that roughly 3% of GDP were spent on the army pre 1990 in Germany. When the army was reduced in strength, many cities faced a dire future. 7 years ago, I went to Frankenberg on River Eder, and back in the day, the Bundeswehr training center for electronic warfare was there. There's like barracks with 4,500 personnel. They reduced it to a planned personnel strength of 500, out of which there were only 300. Turns out the biggest employer in this city was the hospice. This whole city felt dead. It felt completely dead. And this is what's happening to major parts of Germany. The country tries to improve its defense capabilities. It's not going to happen. The money that was supposed to be spent on defense, it's not going to be spent on defense. It's going to be spent, like, if it's going to be spent on defense, it's going to be spent to replenish what has been spent in Ukraine. The money that is being spent really for new things, and we also have to notice we hammered home this message several times. The 2% NATO spending goal also consists of a 20% new material spending goal and like an R&D goal. What's happening right now is that Germany is thinking about, oh, maybe improving motorways can be considered part of military spending because there is this huge bottleneck. If the Russians were to attack, they will likely overrun the Baltic states. They will likely overrun Poland because no NATO tank, except for that forward operating base that is somewhere on the eastern Polish border, will be there. The situation that the German government has brought Germany into over decades, like this is not blaming Friedrich Merz, not blaming Angela Merkel, mainly blaming Angela Merkel though, because she actually ended conscription, or she paused conscription. We, in our second to last previous episode, we talked about the Junge Union chairman who was like, I want conscription to be back by next January. Guy didn't serve. Guy doesn't plan to serve anyway. The problem is the infrastructure in Europe overall is improving. The infrastructure in Germany is crumbling. Even my home country of Austria has improvements by and far. There are new tunnels being built for the railway. Now you can take an American tank and move it from Italy to Poland at 100 miles per hour on a train through like Austria and the Czech Republic are the only countries in between there. With Germany, you will be stuck exactly where you were stuck pre-1990, which is the Fulda Gap for the Americans and the northern German flatlands. Germany has no interest in a war because Germany will be the battlefield of any war that's happening in Europe. Still, the country does not manage to improve the military situation. I have to say one positive thing about the German government. This is Boris Pistorius, who's the German Minister of Defense. he is doing an okay job, I think. And the good thing is he is actually doing a lot for public policy, for improving the stance of Bundeswehr members in the country. Go check, like, American viewers and listeners, go check out the social media accounts of the Bundeswehr. They are actually pretty cool. You remember, I think it was 60 Minutes is an ABC program, right? Or
I think
ABC.
So.
Yes. Oh, yeah, look it up.
One of those fake news outlets.
Yeah, but so there's been CBS News. In December 2025, talked about the rearming Germany, modernizing the military, and had cool interviews. You know, the guys there attending basic training, attending, like, obviously not specialist training, because the German special forces were really good. They don't talk to cameras. They wear their masks all the time. But you know, even standard German Panzergrenadiere, like tank grenadiers, like motorized
armored infantry.
They're good guys. They're super qualified, and the government is just letting them down for decades now. Boris Pistorius, the only social democrat who has any chance of improving this, and I think he's just being screwed over by the rest of this government. The German government, and I'm sorry to say so many things about Germany right now, and we're like moving back and back and back on talking about the UK. The German government is dysfunctional. Yes, I was not a supporter of banning new oil and coal-fired heating systems, but banning them for banning new systems for three years, trying to make it happen that Germany could actually reach a point where there's a domestic industry with these heat pumps. Now they're like, no, you can do a new oil stove after 2028. Germany, like, renewables can be something deeply conservative. They can be something deeply right wing. The countryside should be clean. The countryside should be beautiful. This is for people and the environment. The countryside should also be safe. Coal costs more lives than nuclear power ever does. But then along comes the German government and kills another industry. Back in the early 2000s, Germany was world leading in solar stuff. Then they made it so Chinese solar panels could be brought to Germany. These solar panels were just the German solar panels, but 3 years behind in technology, because they were all, like, technology was ripped off. Like, what do you call it? They call it decompiled, backwards engineered.
Yeah, reverse engineered. Yeah.
Heat pumps now. The same thing is happening with motor vehicles. Germany is still the country of engineers, but the engineers leave the country. Germany has roughly 200,000 more people leaving than coming to Germany when it comes to Germans. And this number even includes the Turks who go back to Turkey. So if you subtract them, if you subtract the moving balance between Germany and Near Eastern countries, where there's a lot more of influx than there is of people moving back to their home countries, you're left with at least 200,000 Germans. Say 50% of them are young, 50% of these are well qualified, and 50% of these are well qualified in technical stuff. That is 25,000 engineers, researchers, young people, smart people leaving this country more than are actually coming in. Of course, many of them move to other EU countries, but many of them still move to the US. And this is something that we need to really state here as a European focused podcast. The age of America has been somewhat crumbling over the past years under the Joe Biden administration. I don't want to really confirm that there's like rebuilding that is successfully happening in terms of Europe. The US has a really bad reputation in Europe right now, which, you know, is mainly due to Europeans not understanding what's going on in America and what political things are happening and do need to happen. But the fact that Germany does not manage to score a goal out of this very easy circumstances tells you a lot. I think there's also a lot of Germans moving to the UK every year still.
Interesting enough. I mean, certainly a country where the infrastructure is crumbling, the UK, and has a myriad of problems, migration being one of them, public security being the other, deindustrialization similar to Germany as well, but in some ways, certainly in certain sectors, be that IT or be that financial sectors, it's still a pretty vibrant economy in spite of it all, which is a miracle. Interesting enough, one footnote, and I made that argument in a former podcast. See the difference between the German Green Party and the UK Green Party. In the UK, the Green Party are what we call watermelons as well. Green on the outside, red on the inside. So they are communists in all but names. And the UK Green Party is probably more communist than the German Green Party. However, with one interesting difference, the UK Green Party thinks that nuclear is actually a clean technology that should be supported. So that's an interesting bit. Probably one footnote, and then we're going to segue entirely into the UK. Yes. I do think one interesting bit worth much of Germany's best engineering will survive. So on the one hand, you outlined a situation where we're losing our industry hand over fist because we think we can do it all by renewables, and renewables are not per se bad, but you must just be aware that there will be days where no wind is blowing and, well, no sun is shining, especially at night. And then if you don't have a backup, yeah, well, for certain industries, you can operate an aluminium smelter and suddenly have the energy go off. The entire place breaks. You can have certain chemical processes. If the energy goes off, like an entire batch spoils, or the entire machine breaks. So you can have that. And if you as a company don't have that security of planning, that you will have energy at all times, like the German nuclear power plants, which used to be world leading. I mean, I think Siemens still brags that their nuclear power plants at the heyday of German nuclear power were the world record holders years in a row in terms of most terawatt being produced in a year. So we're really doing our industry a disservice. However, there is one industry where we are kind of regaining some footage, and it is the defense industry. In spite of it all, that's not sufficient at the moment, but certainly one of the best investments. We're not talking much investments I've ever made, like 50 euros, and I got like 200 euros out of that, was investing in one of the German defense companies. So a lot of is happening, a lot of innovation is happening, and I think that's where a lot of our best engineers are hibernating, because it's exciting stuff, and we will still manage to sell that kind of stuff. We'll see. I'm still vaguely optimistic when it comes to defense industry, as long as our establishment gets its act together and gets us some sort of energy that is reliable, be that nuclear, be that coal, I don't care almost, as long as it's something renewable. I would prefer nuclear, obviously, as you say. Environmental protection is something deeply conservative. Well, there's the UK, and the UK has two interesting things going on at the moment. First, one bit, which obviously there was a stabbing of two Jewish citizens in London, and now obviously all politicians are screaming there needs to be more censorship, like we don't have enough censorship in the UK. There need to be new laws and then quick tribunals and so forth and so forth. And whilst I obviously in this podcast we fervently disavow violence against majorities and minorities, but I'm going to put in a tiny bit of criticism. The UK state now screams murder, and on the one hand, rightfully so, when two Jewish citizens get attacked. But however, earlier this year, we had a total spree of ordinary citizens, ordinary white Christian English citizens being stabbed, walking their dog, or trying to help somebody who was getting stabbed whilst walking his dog. And the UK government didn't set up special task force. The UK government didn't scream murder. The UK government didn't have special tribunals. The UK government didn't do that again when the full extent of hundreds and thousands of British girls being sex trafficked and raped at an industrial scale. None of that. So, and by the way, I mean, that is not a swipe at Jewish citizens in the United States either, but it just shows how the system treats the majority, the Christian white majority, different from other groups. In the United States, when suddenly, as long as the target of riots and criticism and bullying on US university campuses were just white Christian males or just Christians in general, and professors said bad things about white people or posted "I'm dreaming of white genocide," nothing happened. The moment that, you know, very, very despicable things were said during the pro-Palestinian protests, suddenly institutions like Harvard and the Trump administration brought down the hammer on the speech, on hate speech on campuses, even though I think that shouldn't be happening in a country that has the First Amendment culture. I'm aware that the First Amendment only applies between the government and its citizens. So yes, legally they're correct and they're private institutions, but still in a country that has that whole culture, that shouldn't happen. So it's interesting, both the duplicity in the United States and the UK. Something happens to white Christians, nothing happens, really. Or it gets denied. Or very often, well, yeah, it was mental health or its own fault. Something happens to minorities and the whole force of the government cracks down on them. It's an interesting observation. In terms of the United Kingdom's political system, quick reminder, the two legacy parties, you mentioned bad polling numbers for Friedrich Merz, one of the worst approval ratings. Keir Starmer outperforms them all, worst polling numbers of any prime minister in history. Everybody hates him. The very left, the very right, the moderates, the centrists, everybody hates him. But somehow that man has staying power. Not by charisma, not by his voice.
Again, you always know I like to imitate Keir Starmer because that's how that man speaks.
Very robotic. We call him the Starmbot. But the, interesting enough, the same is with the British Tory Party. So I think both parties are going the way of the dodo. So for American viewers, that is, and listeners, that is like the Republicans and the Democrats being replaced in a dinosaur kind of extinction cataclysmic event. Obviously, there is Donald Trump's old friend Nigel Farage, Reform. But they always criticize them for being a boomeresque party, and they always backpedal, and they, in a country that increasingly feels that they're no longer in charge, that he feels a Muslim candidate for London. Whether, you know, I'm not making a point about the merits, but whether that's politically a smart move or not remains to be seen. So he constantly dials back, and increasingly the party becomes cuckified and feels like rhino Republicans. But there is another party actually rising, an entrepreneur by the name of Rupert Lowe. Elon Musk gives him his full backing. He's a brilliant rhetorician who is measured, has set up a party out of nothing. It has become one of the strongest parties in record time. So there are going to be local elections in England this Thursday, and state parliament elections in Wales and Scotland. Restore is called the new party. Nigel Farage's party is called Reform, but Restore, Rupert Lowe's party, could not manage to vet enough candidates quickly enough for Scotland and Wales, and they took the wise decision, okay, before we field crap, we're not going to field anybody. Those are kind of mistakes that you make early on and then they stick with you forever. So they made a wise decision. But in certain designated places in the local elections in England, they're going to field parties, and they have a very smart strategy. And I hope much of the European right are listening. So the place, and it's a quaint English-sounding place where Rupert Lowe is from, is called Great Yarmouth. And in Great Yarmouth, they founded the party Great Yarmouth First. And it is Rupert Lowe's district where he serves as Member of Parliament. And they're trying to win all the local councillors that they can and kind of have an ink blot effect, kind of start locally, start conquering local constituencies with non-national issues, and always calling them Great Yarmouth first, Great, let's say Great Swindon first, whatever quaint English towns you can think of. And interesting enough, Reform UK, Nigel Farage's party, the Boomer Party, that has a lot of backing of very mainstreamy kind of outlets in the meantime, is also spending a lot of money. They're outspending Restore and Great Yarmouth. And this is the first battle. And mind you, Rupert Lowe had been exercised as it were, from Reform in the most despicable way, because he spoke up for mass migrations. They tried to kick him out of the party. He said he had threatened to assault the vice president of the party, a guy of Bangladeshi origin, by the name of Yusuf, and he allegedly had threatened to shoot him. And also they claimed he had dementia. All of the other threats turned out to be unsubstantiated, as does the dementia threat. And in hindsight, they said, oh, you know, when he said he wanted to deport or mass deport foreigners, we couldn't let him be. So they kind of almost admitted that they lied about it. And so that's the background of it. Warning for all European populist and right-wing party. First of all, you can be subverted by the mainstream. You can be boomerified. And you work with the other side, the former based constituency can work with all kind of ugly tricks. And so this is a space to be watched. I mean, we are seeing a civil war of sorts within MAGA. I'm not trying to spend any time in this podcast to draw any parallels here, but just as a footnote for American viewers and listeners, there's some parallel. And I think that rounds off today's news from the UK. Lucas, any thoughts?
No, that's all from my end. I do need to admit, you're my main news source for the UK. The country seems to be completely off Germans' attention at this point, which is likely because Germany and Europe as a whole have a lot of problems to take care of. What's up for the next week? We hope to be joined by Fabian and Todd once more, and we will be back very soon. Thank you for listening and watching, and take care. Goodbye.
Thank you so much, Lucas.
Thank you, Christian.